Hello, and welcome to the FirstGroup 2020 full year results call. Throughout the call, all participants will be in a listen-only mode, and afterwards, there will be a question and answer session. Just to remind you, this conference call is being recorded. Today, I'm pleased to present Matthew Gregory, the Chief Executive. Please go ahead with your meeting.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us for our full year results presentation. As you're aware, we're having to do things slightly differently this year. I'm joined on the call by Ryan Mangold, our CFO, and we also have David Martin, our Chairman, on the line. It's fair to say that we've got a lot to cover off today, and we're likely to take about 50 minutes to run through the presentation today. I will start off giving a brief summary of the results as a whole. Ryan will take you through the full year numbers, and then I'll come back to talk more about each division, the year just gone, the impact of coronavirus on the business, and the challenges and opportunities that we see for the future. Now, we published our presentation on the website. If you go to firstgroupplc/investors, it's on the right-hand side, and we will try to preface our comments with a slide number so that you're clear which section we're referring to. Let me start on page three, and let me start by reiterating that our priority throughout this entire period has been to ensure that our passengers and our people remain safe whilst continuing to provide critical services to key workers and to our communities. Throughout the development of this pandemic, we've responded immediately to government advice, ensuring that our workplaces and services were safe for our colleagues and for our passengers. We've enhanced cleaning processes, added long-lasting disinfectants to the process, as well as leading the industry in implementing social distancing measures and information for customers to ensure that public transportation is safe. Seeing how our people have stepped up to the challenge of this crisis has been a huge source of pride and inspiration. Our teams have delivered food parcels and educational materials to their students and customers. We've delivered medical and safety kit. The teams have raised money and awareness and made charitable donations. More importantly, they have kept our country's key workers and first responders moving safely at all times. Our collaboration and inclusiveness is a strength, and I'm proud of the immensely diverse workforce, and I want to take a moment to applaud and acknowledge all of our colleagues that live and uphold the values of FirstGroup. Let me move on to page four. Overall, we made good progress during the year prior to the impact of COVID-19 on the business. First Student and Transit had strong bidding seasons with good retention and pricing. First Bus made good progress on network optimization in the second half and was also awarded significant funding to progress its leading position in low emission vehicles. We were pleased to win the West Coast Partnership contract under new Williams-approved terms, and also to be rewarded with a further direct award on Great Western. As flagged, there were headwinds for Greyhound in terms of its competitive marketplace, and we also saw further hardening of the U.S. insurance market. However, in early March, we were moving forward with our strategy and were largely in line with our expectations. I'll talk a lot more about how coronavirus affected our sector, significantly reducing our passenger volumes, but I'm proud of how quickly and effectively our business reacted to the crisis. This response allowed us to protect revenue and employment, securing government and customer support to continue to provide vital services for key workers on both sides of the Atlantic. Cash flow for the 2019-20 year was ahead of our expectations, and the action taken since the pandemic took hold has secured significant liquidity headroom and stability. As you'll hear today, there is much uncertainty ahead in terms of the level of future fiscal support and also the impact this pandemic has on people's appetite, ability, and need to travel on mass public transport. However, I believe more than ever that public transportation has a vital part to play in the regeneration of our economy, and this has been recognized by government, customers, and our communities by their support. We are well-placed to emerge from this pandemic in a strong position, at which point we will resume our portfolio rationalization plans at the earliest appropriate time. With that, let me hand over to Ryan to go through the numbers.
Thank you, Matthew, and good morning, everyone. There's a lot of complex issues to get through in the financial review, and I'm going to cover four key areas. Firstly, our financial performance for the year, including the financial consequences of the pandemic that hit in the last few weeks of the year, the implementation of IFRS 16 that has had a material impact to our reported results, an update on the major non-GAAP adjustments that we incurred this year, and our cash performance and what we have done to strengthen our current liquidity headroom since the crisis struck. On slide six, The advent of the pandemic had a material impact on our business, with a significant decline in passenger volumes in the last weeks in March. That being said, given that all our businesses run essential services and are vital to the economies and the communities we support, they are all now underpinned by some form of fiscal and contractual arrangements. Several of these contractual arrangements continue to evolve and are being further enhanced and negotiated after the year end. As noted in our 11th of March update to trading, March is a significant trading month for the group, given most businesses have an increasing level of demand as we move into the spring, and we were anticipating to deliver a broadly in-line adjusted operating profit. As the pandemic struck, we reacted swiftly to reduce fixed costs in the last weeks in March, given the reduction in volumes, with the vast majority of cost savings occurring after the year end. As a consequence of the pandemic, we believe that this had an impact to the group's anticipated operating profit for the year of roughly £54 million. This impact was materially higher in these last weeks of the year than the expected run rate, given that most fiscal measures have either been enhanced or further contractually agreed subsequent to the year end. Matthew will talk more about these measures later in the presentation. Despite the impact of COVID in the last weeks of the year, revenues were up 8.8% as reported, and benefited from the growth in the contracting businesses, and in rail benefiting further from the Avanti startup from the 8th of December. Largely as a consequence of the £54 million impact of COVID effect, operating profit of £256.8 million was down 22.1% in constant currency and before IFRS 16. As we saw at the half year, the implementation of IFRS 16 has had a significant impact on the group's account. This impact is mainly in rail, where we take no long-term risk on these assets based on how the franchise transition works between operators, with the rolling stock leases passing to the subsequent franchisee. The IFRS 16 accounting is further complicated by what was previously onerous contracts in rail relating to the poor performance in TP and SWR that are now subject to impairment rather than onerous contract accounting. The standard has resulted in a substantial increase in EBITDA of £490 million, with operating lease payments being stripped out and are replaced with depreciation from the capitalized right-of-use assets and related interest charge, with a net effect of £33.8 million reduction in profit before tax, mostly due to the higher interest charges relating mainly to the rail division. As we flagged at the half year, recognizing the right-of-use assets has resulted in a £2.4 billion increase to reported net debt, of which rail is £2.2 billion, including Avanti, that commenced on the 8th of December, and circa £200 million of mainly passenger-carrying vehicles that have been capitalized in our road division. As a reminder, all of our debt covenant testing is on a frozen GAAP basis, and this standard does not have an impact in that regard. That's all I'm going to say on IFRS 16, and further details on the impact by division are included in the appendices to the presentation. Turning to page 7 on revenue. As noted before, almost all of the fiscal and contractual measures we have been able to achieve have been backdated to effectively the start of the pandemic, where the accounting allows for this. This is particularly relevant to rail, bus, student, and Greyhound. Looking at the underlying business performance, where revenues were up £628 million as reported, including the benefit of currency translation on a weaker sterling adding £108 million. Let me take you through the slide from left to right. In student, we have seen strong growth in revenues, up £85 million, benefiting from pricing growth and inflation increases, and net growth through share shift and acquisitions. In transit, revenues up £70 million with both net growth and pricing increases. In Greyhound, the lower revenue performance was driven by the Western Canada closure in the prior year of circa £30 million and the business being further impacted by a difficult competitive market and material reduction in immigration volumes pre-COVID. In bus, the business was able to generate underlying like-for-like revenue growth of £9 million. However, the total revenues are lower due to the sale of the loss-making Manchester depots in the prior year. In rail, the business delivered £192 million in underlying revenue growth and benefited too from Avanti that started on the 8th of December that has contributed £378 million to revenue in the year. Finally, we estimate that COVID had a net £122 million impact of revenue in the last few weeks of March, with lower passenger and service volumes partially offset by the contractual and fiscal measures. Turning to the adjusted operating profit drivers, and again I will take you through the slide from left to right. Firstly, after a £6.5 million currency benefit from weaker sterling, we have also changed our accounting policy with regards to software amortization. This was previously shown within total amortization as an adjusting item, and the prior year has been restated for this to be more in line with market practice as this has developed. Matthew will go into the divisional performance in more detail, but despite the revenue growth in student and transit, all the North American businesses have all been impacted by the hardening insurance market and related increase in claims environment, and the resulting higher operating insurance cost charges included in underlying result, as well as a tightening labor market resulting in above-inflation labor cost pressures. In bus, the business has benefited from revenue growth and management actions to remove costs. However, these were not enough to mitigate the inflation cost pressures in the period. The business was well advanced with its cost savings program, but the implementation was impacted by COVID and the related significant service level reduction in the last weeks in March. Rail benefits from Avanti that started on the 8th of December that contributed £29 million, and combined with the continued good performance in GWR, Rail was on track for strong delivery before the COVID impact. Relative to the £122 million net revenue decline from lower passenger volumes, offset by fiscal and contractual measures, our estimation of the profitability impact of the business in the month of March was £54 million. This reflects our swift action to take out cost in response to lower passenger volumes, as well as the fiscal and contractual measures secured in each division. The cost reduction and customer and government support was secured as quickly as possible after the lockdown started, but a great deal of this activity fell after the year end. For example, the 5311F funding in Greyhound and in bus, the COVID bus service support grant relaunch in late May, and Scotland and Wales following in July. Hence, the run rate impact of profitability in March should not be a read across for the impact of the pandemic into the next fiscal year. Further details of the divisional profit and revenue performances are included in the appendices. Turning to the bottom half of the adjusted income statement on page 9, finance costs are materially higher as a consequence of capitalizing former operating lease assets, and hence the related impact to interest costs under IFRS 16. Underlying net debt finance costs are £2 million higher year-on-year due to a slightly higher average borrowing levels, with net debt staying, however, broadly static year-on-year. The effective tax rate is in line year-on-year and results in a total tax charge of £25 million, down £22 million year-on-year due to lower profitability. As a reminder, given our historical losses, we pay very limited amount of cash tax. The group's primary non-controlling interests are in Avanti, that is profitable, and in SWR under IFRS 16. The net effect is an adjusted attributable profit of £83 million in the year, down 48.2% as reported. Turning to the non-GAAP adjustments on slide 10, I will come back to the Greyhound and North American insurance provision issues on the subsequent slides. The COVID adjusting items relate to students where there are a minor number of contracts which run through to the start of the next school year, where we are no longer going to be providing the service, and where the school districts have not been contractually supportive, and hence we have provided £14 million for over and onerous contracts. We also hedge a high proportion of our fuel requirements, and as a consequence of COVID, a large number of our vehicles have been parked, which has meant that we are materially overhedged, and hence we have written down these hedge positions by £7.4 million. Furthermore, we have incurred £58 million of restructuring and reorganizing costs, split broadly between the group-wide project to remove costs, for which we expect to continue to see future benefits post the crisis, and the costs incurred for the execution of our strategy of rationalizing our portfolio, for which we are well advanced for. We also have a £9.3 million in property profits that we have recognized as an adjusting item, given the materiality of the amount in student, and in Greyhound, the profit related to a sale from a Western Canada closure. This resulting in a total non-GAAP adjusting charge for the year of £410 million, an increase of £194 million from the half-year position. Turning to the Greyhound impairment, subsequent to the half-year where we recognized £124 million in impairment charge, the discount rate driven by the equity risk premium that is used for future cash flows has increased materially. Furthermore, the near-term impact of the pandemic and the resulting material reduction in passenger volumes that is expected to be mostly offset by the 5311F funding and the related pace of recovery expected into 2021 has meant that a further impairment charge is required. From a liability perspective, Greyhound has a large pension scheme that was closed to new members and future accrual many decades ago that is in runoff, as well as their share of our North American self-insurance provision. Following the write-down, Greyhound is carried at a negative £156 million on the group balance sheet. As a reminder, the Greyhound assets include a substantial number of properties that have been owned for several years, and we have invested more recently in the fleet to bring the customer offering up to the highest standard we expect from the strong brand. Despite the challenges this business faced, they were able to generate $44 million in EBITDA under IFRS 16 in the past 12 months. On page 12, the North American insurance market and claims environment continued to harden since the first half of the year, resulting in a higher level of costs incurred for the settlement of historical losses than our actuaries had estimated. There is also a materially lower discount rate at year-end versus the prior year, down 180 basis points, that has meant a further increase in the provision of $26 million. Furthermore, we have also recognized an additional amount over and above the actuarial assessment to be at the higher end of the actuarial range to provide further protection against the settlement of historical losses. To be clear, our underlying business performance that we have reported includes the effect of this increased insurance cost environment in the year in order that our current year provisioning is in line with the hardening claims environment. As a reminder, the majority of the claims in the provisions are expected to settle over the next five-year period. Over the page, due to the continual increases we have seen in the last few years as the wider auto liability insurance and claims market has hardened, we have made further advances to our processes. Namely, higher insurance costs are included in our bid models for both student and transit, given that these increases in insurance costs are an industry-wide phenomenon. This has not been at the expense of the bid margins that continue to advance. We are taking an even more active approach to claims management, and we continue to drive safety in our organization where we believe that we are the market leaders. Furthermore, our recent experience over the past 3 months suggests that the actuarial provisioning is in line with the current settlement values. It is our intention to fully remove the insurance volatility on the sale of our North American businesses, and when we have the cash and resources to do this. Looking at the cash flow on page 14, pre-IFRS 16, in the road division, £262 million of cash has been invested in the business from the £483 million of EBITDA that was generated. Student and Greyhound disposed of certain properties in the period that generated £47 million, and the net insurance and provisions cash outflows were £65 million over and above what has been included in EBITDA for the insurance charges in the period. The road working capital outflow includes the impact of working capital under the fiscal measures where the cash has been received after the year end. For example, the CBSSG in bus, the employee retention support under the CARES Act, and 5311F funding in Greyhound. This is resulting in a road operating cash flow of £196 million. The rail cash flows includes the take-on of Avanti, where there was £64 million in working capital inflow, resulting in a group operating cash inflow of £287 million. The pension payments were £39 million over and above the EBITDA charges, and we paid £86 million in interest, including a small amount of tax cash payments. And we spent £41 million in exceptional items, relating mainly to the restructuring and reorganizing costs in the year I mentioned earlier. The £22 million of acquisition costs relate to three acquisitions in students of 850 buses, and they remain active in growing the business through this route. This results in a net cash inflow of £99 million for the year. That was better than our expectations when we started the year. Looking at the liquidity position on page 15 and what we have done as a consequence of COVID, we have reviewed our CapEx program and stopped all non-committed or non-supportive contractual CapEx. We have, however, critically assessed growth CapEx to take advantage of opportunities as they present. We have expanded our access to lease financing by £75 million, and we have increased the level of supplier credit, mainly for buses and student. We have also set up a commercial paper program and drew down £300 million under the Bank of England COVID Corporate Finance Fund. We also agreed a £250 million bridging loan at the end of March for the refinance of the £350 million bond that matures in April 21. And for pensions, despite significant volatility in financial markets at the end of March, the pension deficit stayed broadly static at £313 million, benefiting from liability management and investment strategy improvements. Furthermore, we have agreed the bus pension scheme and UK bus local government pension scheme triennial valuations as at April 2019. For the bus pension scheme, we have worked collegiately with the trustee to agree the deficit and improve recovery period with an ambition to get to a low dependency over a reasonable time frame. As a consequence, cash payments for the bus pension arrangements are expected to be £10 million lower in full year 21 and then revert to be broadly in line with full year 20, and the risk of continued cash requirements in the longer term expected to reduce. Over the page, as of the end of June, we have £850 million in committed undrawn revolver credit facilities and free cash before rail ring-fenced cash. This level of committed undrawn liquidity, excluding the drawdown on the CCFF in April, has increased by around £80 million, reflecting good cash generation despite the crisis. Since the year-end, the group has generated positive operating cash flow before committed capex, despite the higher working capital demands as the fiscal support measures come into effect. There has been roughly a £65 million increase in total net debt pre-IFRS 16 since the year-end, despite the traditionally higher first-quarter capex payments relating to committed capital. Our covenant ratio for the past financial year was 1.4 times versus a test ratio of 3.75, and the total maturity of our debt is currently 3.3 years. Furthermore, S&P and Fitch have also recently reaffirmed our investment-grade rating at BBB-, albeit have moved us to negative outlook as a consequence of the potential impact of the pandemic. So in summary, on page 17, despite the material impact to our business from COVID, the group has generated a small operating profit in the first quarter due to the fiscal and contractual measures for the business and the significant costs that we've been able to take out in reaction to the crisis that hit in the last weeks of the financial year. As a reminder, the student business in particular is however seasonal, with schools shut over the summer months, and hence the result for the first half is anticipated to be impacted due to this expected seasonality. Given that the implications for the business continue to evolve, as governments and customers respond to the dynamic changes from the pandemic that are happening at a local and national level, there remains material uncertainty regarding the fiscal funding levels and the pace at which our customer base returns to some level of pre-COVID normality. As a result, it is not clear precisely how the business will perform in the near term, and hence we are not able to provide guidance for the current financial year. Our current committed liquidity is however strong at £850 million of free cash before rail ring-fenced cash and committed undrawn revolving credit facility at the end of June, and our lenders remain supportive of our business through new lines of credit since the pandemic broke. These factors and our financial performance in the first quarter under extreme circumstances provide me with the confidence in the resilience of our group through the crisis. I now hand back to Matthew for the review of the business and the strategy.
Great. Thanks, Ryan. So I'm going to refresh your memory as to how coronavirus has affected us as a group and then give more detail on each division. And I'll then close off by coming back to our portfolio rationalisation plans. So with that, moving on to slide 19. Passenger transportation was one of the hardest hit sectors at the start of this outbreak. Schools closed in North America almost immediately, removing all transportation requirements, as well as closing down all charter opportunities. And schools will remain closed until at least after the summer, and summer schools are also cancelled. Our first transit business was affected in a variety of ways. Shuttle was hit by university campus closures across the country, as well as a reduction in airport volumes. Paratransit was hit by the inability of non-emergency patients to access doctors and hospitals. Our fixed route operations continued to run, albeit with reduced service levels. And our call centres saw significantly reduced activity. More positively, our transit management operations continued to run, as did our first vehicle service operations. But overall, service levels were down on average by 40%, but are now running slightly higher, only down by 35%. Greyhound saw passenger volumes fall dramatically, down 85% initially. But as the only provider of a national network, our volumes have grown and are now only down by approximately 70%. In UK bus, we saw passenger volumes fall 90% following lockdown, and these are now closer to around 75% down. And rail volumes were hit very hard, and we're still only operating at volumes between 10 and 15% of what they previously were. For example, we'd ordinarily see 1.8 million passengers flowing through Waterloo during a week, and passenger numbers are currently more like around 200,000 a week. So turning to slide 20. In the face of the precipitous decline in passenger volumes, it's worth highlighting that as well as negotiating with customers and stakeholders to protect revenue and mileage, which I'll cover at a divisional level, we also took decisive action to prioritise cash flow and reduce non-essential expenditure in this period. A large proportion of our workforce were furloughed in the UK and North America. All non-essential capital expenditure has been halted, as well as any discretionary operating expenditure. We've accelerated cost reduction plans where appropriate and utilised government tax payment holidays where possible. In addition, to reflect the impact on the broader workforce and to preserve cash, the executive directors, executive committee members and the board volunteered a 20% cut in salary and fees, as well as wider senior management agreeing to defer salary. We've acted swiftly to protect the business, to best position it as passenger volumes start to build up again. So let's now move on to talk about each of the divisions in turn. And on slide 21, I'll talk about First Student. The business had a strong bid season, growing the fleet to 43,000 buses and growing market share again. Retention rate was strong, and we're expecting it to finish at 88%. This reflects our great team, our record-breaking customer satisfaction scores, and strong safety record. We were successful in winning new business, mainly from our larger competitors, with a small amount of conversion as well. Pricing continued to outpace labour inflation at mid-single-digit levels. I was also pleased to see that during the year we completed three bolt-on acquisitions, totaling 850 buses. This included increasing our position in special needs transportation, which is a faster-growing segment of the market. The business continues to look at ways to improve its service offering and expand its capability. Our vans offering continues to pick up traction as we broaden the offering to our customers. And we're pioneering tablet solutions for our drivers, with these being rolled out across the fleet to enable us to improve routing efficiency and reduce labour cost. We're also ramping up our capability in running vehicles with alternative fuels. We're currently running trials of electric buses with customers in Chicago, Minnesota and Quebec, with a variety of suppliers as we start to work with customers to tackle air quality and carbon emissions in their areas. Looking at the P&L, you can see that we were not significantly affected by weather this year. As I mentioned before, pricing more than compensated for additional labour costs. However, this and management actions were not sufficient to overcome the additional annual cost of insurance. As a result, the pre-COVID margin fell by 70 basis points to 8.7%. The COVID impact of $53 million fall in revenue was mitigated by $37 million of cost savings, leaving a profit impact of $16 million. Turning to the business's response to coronavirus on slide 22. First Student does not have the contractual right to be paid for services when schools are closed, nor are its customers always obliged to run schools for a set number of days. The team worked with all of its customers and reinforced the importance of maintaining driver and operational capability. As a result, over the past 3 months, we have seen 74% of our customers agreeing to at least partially reimburse our revenue and help us protect our ability to start up in the new year. And we expect to recover around 52% of home-to-school revenue. Some customers have reduced the invoice they are prepared to pay to reflect saved fuel costs or putting staff on furlough, and so our effective recovery rate is at around 61%. We will also be utilising all of the assistance permitted in the CARES Act to ensure that we are recovering tax credits for staff that are underutilised during this period of closure. Finally, it's worth reminding you that whilst our recovery of revenue for our home-to-school contracts has been strong, despite not running buses, we are not able to recover the same revenue for our charter business. Historically, our charter business has generated 9% of total revenue for the business. And currently, both school and outside charter is almost zero, and it's likely to take some time to recover. Moving on to the future, on slide 23, I'll tackle the challenges first. We're currently working with all of our school customers to establish when and how schools will reopen after the summer. There is no national standard, and each school will determine its own rules to meet its specific circumstances. Our teams are working incredibly hard with each customer to work through each school's operation and how this will affect student transportation, as well as the impact of any physical distancing requirements. And we also need to be sure that any new cleaning regimes are agreed and financed. Ordinarily, the school start-up is a challenging time as we reset each school's routes and bring back drivers to work for the business. Now, whilst the economic situation in North America may result in a larger pool of available workforce from which to recruit, the average age of student bus drivers will provide challenges for all operators. Approximately one-third of our driver base is over the age of 60, and health fears may result in fewer drivers than normal returning to work, which in turn could increase recruitment, training, and licensing requirements. As I say, the demographics are such that this is an industry-wide issue, but we do believe that our team is well-placed to handle these challenges as we progress over the summer. But looking past the startup, I see opportunities for further new route wins, industry consolidation, and more bolt-on acquisitions as smaller players either cease trading or retire. And with the economic challenges that will be experienced in North America, we may see an increased appetite for outsourcing school transportation as budgetary pressures rise, which we have not seen for some time. There could be challenges, though, with a potentially slow recovery of the charter business, with both schools cutting back and a reduced appetite for social events. So clearly, there is a lot of short-term uncertainty managing the business through the startup, but longer term, I still see this as a fundamentally strong business. It is very clear, as evidenced by experts in recent weeks, that health and education of students will necessitate schools returning in their physical form. As the industry leader, we have demonstrated the resilience of this business through the unprecedented downturn and the value of our high customer satisfaction scores. Moving on to transit, slide 24. This business has continued to demonstrate strong customer relations with a retention rate of 89%. We've seen fixed route customer wins in Merced, California and Arlington, Texas, and a paratransit win in San Bernardino, California. And these wins were from two of our major competitors. We won a contract to expand our largest paratransit contract in the Chicago area, and we've also won a major shuttle contract at LA Airport. I'm pleased to see that we continue to lead the industry with our movement into the alternative transport space. Our partnership with Lyft continues to grow, providing them with wheelchair-accessible vehicles in four large North American cities, and we work with Uber in a similar fashion in Portland. Our trials of autonomous vehicles continue to lead the industry, with recent wins in Houston and Colorado. And I'm pleased that we've been awarded a contract to be the maintenance and operations partner on a military base, using stackable technology for the first time. And the stackable technology reflects the fact that the sensor equipment has been retrofitted onto a traditional manned vehicle. From a financial perspective, as noted at the half year, business performance has been challenging. Whilst pricing was more than sufficient to offset higher labour costs, the increase in insurance costs alongside two legal settlements depressed margins. The COVID impact was significant, with a loss of $10 million of revenue falling through to an additional net cost of $7.5 million. Looking at slide 25 and Transit's response to coronavirus. In transit, contractual terms vary by customer, with a variety of fixed and variable fees being charged in each sector. Despite customers only requiring us to run 65% of our previous service levels, we expect to recover around 79% of revenue from them, and we'll also utilize tax breaks offered by the CARES Act. Moving on to slide 26. Looking forward, we're starting to see customers requesting the restoration of prior service levels. On the fixed route side, we're currently running 72% of services and expect these to start to increase as the lockdown eases. The paratransit activity will start to be restored as patients re-engage with non-emergency treatment, and with the physical distancing requirements, we may see an upturn in the numbers of trips. The shuttle business is skewed towards the university sector, and it appears that universities may start the fall term earlier. They may pass without a break and then finish earlier. Some universities will continue with online teaching, though, which is more suited to a graduate learning regime. And as a final point, I'm also pleased to see that we'll be launching our new Mobility as a Service platform over the summer. The business, called Jaunt, will initially leverage our number one status in the university campus market, giving students a broad range of travel options within their city. More of this later in the year, but this demonstrates that we continue to move our innovation agenda forward, despite the current crisis. Moving on to Greyhound on slide 27. Prior to the pandemic, Greyhound's markets were challenged, with low fuel costs encouraging car usage, competition from ultra-low-cost airline carriers, and new entrants to the market. We also saw strong immigration demand in Q1 of last year in the southern border states. This stopped abruptly as a result of changing government immigration policy, and volumes have remained at historically low levels. We have continued to upgrade our digital offering, focusing on yield management, and we've also introduced new fleet into the business, which has improved operational performance, as well as customer perception and satisfaction. The financial challenges of the business have continued from the first half, with revenue down a total of $32 million, reflecting the points I made earlier. Whilst management action has been taken to reduce miles and remove costs and restructure Canada, this was offset by inflation and insurance costs. COVID had an $8 million impact on revenue, which fell through to the bottom line, since savings in staff and mileage costs were offset by a property sale, which was delayed due to the crisis. Moving on to slide 28. Following the introduction of lockdown measures, the business led lobbying efforts to ensure that the US CARES Act included a grant to enable rural intercity bus services to continue, and the Act included $326 million of available funding. Given its unique network and scale, Greyhound is eligible to be a significant recipient of this funding, and the business has been running approximately 40% of its prior mileage to ensure that it maintains its community-critical national network. The funding was passed to each individual state's Department of Transport, and Greyhound is working with them to apply for it. Working with the government departments can be a lengthy process in normal times, and so efforts have been made to progress agreements, awards, contracts and payments as quickly as possible. To date, we have initiated contracts in 24 states, received confirmation of award from 16 states, and have contractualized 6 awards. Of the total funding package, we run services in states amounting to about 92% of the total. And we've also seen states such as New York and California prioritize smaller, more local providers with their initial awards. We would still expect to receive around one-third of the total funding amount and are working hard to secure this, as well as lobbying hard for the next potential CARES Act package. Moving on to the future, on slide 29, the funding provided through the CARES Act demonstrates that there is a place for long-distance coach travel in the US, connecting cities and communities. We're currently operating just over 40% of our previous mileage and are selling around 30% of previous ticket volumes. We've had a significant change in the booking window, with the vast majority of passengers waiting till a day or two prior to travel before they book, and this has resulted in high yields, and consequently revenue is currently running at around 40% of prior levels. The dramatic change to the competitive environment and reduction of mileage levels has given us an opportunity to fully assess the network in its current state and how this can be reshaped in the context of the new competitive environment. And the CARES Act funding demonstrates the value of the network, but we need to be clear that we can make the right financial return in this new landscape. We know that the curve of the recovery is unclear and will be affected by a number of factors, whether it's people's propensity to travel in the face of the health environment, working from home, reducing commuting and business travel, and the competitive reaction from traditional competitors, new entrants, and the low-cost airline business. And while the petrol prices are low, car competition could still be strong, although the economic environment could be such that car ownership may become cost prohibitive. So a lot of uncertainty, but an opportunity to reshape the business and the cost base in the face of a new landscape. But I will say that we do remain committed to divesting this business in the context of our overall portfolio rationalization strategy. Given that most of its competitors had to close during the lockdown period, the business has demonstrated that it's in a better position to thrive due to its unique network. However, we need to ensure that any potential transaction terms and financial capability of any buyers remain valid. As we finalise the recovery of funding from each state, and also our view of the network, we'll be able to recast our financial numbers and resume our divestment conversations. In the meantime, we also continue to progress our plans to monetize the property portfolio if appropriate valuations are available to us. So let's move over to the UK on slide 30. Prior to the crisis, the bus business was seeing revenue growth at low levels and yields were being improved. The cost base was also being addressed, with network changes being made to improve profitability of local operating companies. We now have far more sophisticated platforms from which to manage route profitability and generate our timetables and schedules. And a great example of this is the work we've done in Leeds to identify congestion hotspots at a traffic light level, and then work with the City Council to fix particular problems in the Headingley corridor, for example. Our customer-facing digital platforms have also progressed, and contactless and mobile apps now account for more than 50% of commercial revenue. This capability has been extremely helpful during the current period, as we've discouraged customers from using cash where possible, and cash now represents less than 30% of current revenues. I'm pleased with the way that the management team has reacted quickly to provide a safe bus service that complies with social distancing rules. We're leading the industry in this respect, particularly when it comes to giving customers real-time information. Not only does our app show precisely where the bus is en route, we're now showing exactly how many seats are free on each bus and whether the wheelchair space is in use, an industry first. And we're currently running around 80% of mileage, but generating only 25% of prior revenue. From a financial perspective, cost inflation and fuel costs had hit the business during the year and more than offset the like-for-like revenue growth that the business generated. Cost reductions driven by network optimization changes were starting to come through in the fourth quarter of last year, but the impact of these has been halted by the current situation. As I said before, we now have much more sophisticated systems to manage schedules and networks, so I expect these to be effective once demand levels return to normal. COVID hit the business by £9 million in March, and as Ryan intimated previously, the impact of support and cost-cutting had a minimal impact to the March numbers due to the fixed nature of our cost base, notice periods, and the timing of the government grant schemes and furlough support. Moving on to slide 31, we've seen the government recognise the critical nature of our businesses, and we've worked closely with them in First Bus to secure the funding required to provide the service levels needed by the country. The government confirmed the continuation of the BSOG payments and funding for local authorities to maintain concessionary fare payments at prior levels. In addition, the government grant mechanism was agreed to enable us to provide first 40% of prior mileage, and with the new restart scheme, up to 80% of prior mileage, enabling us to bring back the vast majority of our staff to work. Looking forward, on slide 32, we're covered by government grant for a rolling 12-week period, which allows us to run to near full capacity. It is difficult to predict how the recovery will develop and what long-term revenue trends look like. We will need to manage the need to socially distance per government guidelines for some time to come, and transitioning from the current restart model will need to be worked through. We are likely to need continued government funding to transition to new demand levels, particularly so that we can continue to provide the existing level of service. And we know that working patterns are likely to change, with more flexible working and working from home, but people will still need to travel. And given the improvement in our customer proposition, we could see people giving up costly motoring in favour of public transport. It is clear, however, that whilst there may be challenges in the short term, we have also been able to see what bus travel can look like when congestion is eliminated. We have long advocated for local authorities to focus on bus prioritisation schemes to enable public transport to run services as fast as possible and get people out of their cars. And I would hope that they will see this as the right way to move their cities forward. I'd also hope that the dramatic improvement in air quality will also encourage a faster transition to vehicles with better emission control and those meeting zero carbon standards. Our fleet is already 35% Euro 6 or better, the highest in the industry. And I can confirm that First Bus is committed to operating a zero emission and zero carbon fleet by 2035, and we plan not to buy diesel buses in the UK after 2022. However, to fully embrace the challenge of zero carbon, we will need to have a sensible debate with governments and local authorities to ensure that appropriate funding is in place to accelerate this transition. Safe, clean and efficient bus travel is vital to the economic health of our local economies, providing critical services to many, and we will need to work with government to ensure that these services are delivered in the right way. Let's move on to rail on slide 33. Overall, this had been a good year for First Rail. We were extremely pleased to have been awarded the West Coast Partnership, which commenced in December. Great Western Railway managed the largest timetable change in a generation extremely well, and we were very pleased to have been awarded a further direct award on that railway until at least 2023. The timetable change at TransPennine Express was more challenging, though, due to fleet delays, but our customers are now benefiting from the arrival of the new, faster and longer trains that are fundamental to the success of this railway. Prior to coronavirus, passenger revenue growth was flat on a like-for-like basis and volumes were down about 1.3% across our networks. And margins moderated to low single-digit levels, reflecting the transition to emergency measures agreements. Moving on to slide 34. The COVID crisis was swiftly resolved by government and we were pleased that the emergency measures agreements were put in place for our franchises, enabling us to continue to keep essential workers moving throughout a period of lockdown. These agreements remove revenue, cost and contingent capital risk until at least the 20th of September 2020. And at present, Hull Trains, our open access railway, is suspended, and we're monitoring how we can bring this important service back into operation. Looking to the future on slide 35, we're currently operating around 85% of services, but passenger revenue has been down around 10 to 15% of previous levels. In the first wave of lockdown easing, we saw a minimal change to passenger volumes, and these low levels have continued following the subsequent easing. As a result, we expect rail travel to take some time to revert to previous travel patterns, and that business and commuter travel will be significantly affected, particularly in the short term. We continue to work with government to manage the current restrictions of social distancing, as well as the appropriate messaging and guidance with respect to using public transport, and begin to turn to the question of how the industry moves forward post 20th of September. But given current trends, I believe that the current approach will need to be maintained for some time to come, until travel patterns can be reassessed in what will become the new normal. So let me move on to the broader strategy, turning our attention to portfolio rationalisation on slide 36. As you know, we announced back in March that the process to sell our two North American contract businesses were underway, alongside the continued sale process for Greyhound. Despite the coronavirus crisis, I want to be clear that my strategic thinking has not changed. There continues to be no significant synergies between the US and the UK, and so the way to unlock the inherent value in the group is through portfolio rationalisation. Obviously, we've needed to take a breath to allow management to deal with the crisis and assess the situation and the short-term financial performance of the business as the pandemic plays out in the context of any second wave as well. Interested parties will also need to assess their positions and understand the impact on the debt capital markets and their ability to raise finance. But we were already on the path towards the disposal of these highly attractive strategic assets, and a lot of interest had been expressed. We continue to work behind the scenes to progress our readiness, and we also regularly review our options. But once we are clear on when and how the business will reopen and have finalised all of our contractual negotiations with customers, we can then recast the numbers and resume the process, having demonstrated the value and resilience of these businesses in times of crisis. And we'll do this at the earliest appropriate time. Once the portfolio rationalisation is complete, the group will then be focused on its critically important transportation assets in bus and rail in the UK, and these will form the core of the ongoing group. We have the opportunity to reset the network in UK bus, allowing us to drive margins towards those of industry peers. We have a significant role to play in the UK's transition to a higher air quality, lower congestion and zero carbon economy. And the UK Rail Franchising Model report, written by Keith Williams, has not yet been released, but this is believed to emphasise passenger experience and management fee-based contracts. And this was exemplified in the approach to the West Coast Partnership contract. And recent government support for the business has demonstrated how vital our services are to keeping the country moving and supporting transport infrastructure. This new business will need to have a robust balance sheet, it will have a reduced legacy pension burden, and will need adequate capability to support the investment required to reach zero carbon over time. So let me close off by reiterating my pride and gratitude to our dedicated workforce for maintaining critical services, as well as for supporting their communities at this time of crisis. I'm proud of the swift and decisive action taken by our management teams to deal with the dramatic reduction in passenger volumes and protect our business. And we've also improved our liquidity headroom and taken immediate action to reduce costs and improve cash flow. There continues to be a great deal of uncertainty around how our sector will recover from this crisis, whether there will be further waves of lockdown, and the state that the global economy will be in at the end of it. However, our businesses continue to be vital to their countries and communities, and the need for efficient, customer-focused public transportation will be ever more important as we move towards a zero-carbon economy. And this is demonstrated by the level of support that governments and customers have given us. We're committed to our portfolio rationalisation programme so that we can deliver our strategic objective to unlock the inherent value of the group for our shareholders. And with that, I'll turn it over to questions.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you do wish to ask a question, please press 01 on your telephone keypads. If you wish to withdraw your question, you may do so by pressing 02 to cancel. Now, first question comes from the line of Sathish Sivakumar of Citigroup. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Good morning, everyone. Thanks for taking my questions. I have three questions. Firstly, on the insurance provision and impairment. So if you could you please explain the impact of self-insurance provision of $141 million across student, transit, and Greyhound? So what is the split would be for those three divisions? And also, if you could just give more color on what has led to the further increase in Greyhound impairment charges, and do you expect the things to get worse here on regards to Greyhound? Secondly, if you could please update on the expectation of fiscal funding from DfT. When do you see that funding to taper off, and what are the conversations as an industry that you are having with DfT, both for UK bus as well as the regional bus as well as the rail? Thirdly, on the UK regional market, if you could share details around what are the volume expectations are right now versus miles driven trend compared to last year, and when do you expect the things to get back to normal levels? Thank you.
Sathish, could you just repeat that third question? Sorry, you cut out a little bit there.
Yeah, the first question is on the self-insurance provision.
No,
the third question. You touched upon the volume trends for the regional bus market. So if you could just give us more color, what are your expectations are in terms of volumes and miles driven getting back to the normal levels? And what is the current disparity between the miles driven and volume?
Okay. I'll go through those first. Let's touch off on the insurance provision. I think Ryan will have to help me out with some of the splits. But look, in terms of the impairments, I mean, we've got two issues. We have talked consistently on the insurance market that the legal environment in the US has continued to get harder and harder, and judgments and settlements have been more and more punitive. So we've seen that in our business. We are not in any way alone in this in transportation. I think there are 5 of the top 10 legal claims in totality in the US were transportation related. And we have seen this. We've seen people like UPS, we've seen some of the insurance companies recognizing this this hardening. And clearly what we've done is we've looked at the actuarial valuation of these claims. And that advice has indicated that we have to increase the provision from our half-year position. But I think it's also important to recognise that we've been hit by a lower discount rate because we have to discount this provision, which costs us about $25 million, and also Ryan has been more prudent. So I think on the insurance side, we've flagged this a lot. Ryan was very clear that over the last 3 months, though, we've not seen any kind of deterioration, and things seem to have very much levelled out. On the Greyhound side of things, what I'd say is that clearly this is a business that we have had challenges with, and which is why we've made impairments in the past. The impact this half has been entirely affected by the discount rate. And I think what I would say around Greyhound is that we do still have a strong portfolio of property, which is valuable, and we'll continue to move forward in trying to unlock that value at the right time and at the right prices. Perhaps Ryan, do you have that split, or should we?
Yeah, I do have the split situation. I mean, Greyhound has had a relatively large impact for some claims that went against it, and claim settlements that went to jury and went against the business. So they've got a fairly disproportionate larger share of that insurance movement from an exceptional point of view. And then Student and Transit are probably about a third, and then a third of that third in scale.
Great. Well, look, let me come on to the other two questions. And these are really sort of fundamental questions, and this is why we're drawing out the uncertainty, because the reality is we don't know the answer to these two questions. But let me try and give you a bit more colour. So in terms of the funding, the bus agreement is a rolling 12-week agreement whereby the operators put in a claim for a grant to enable us to continue to run the services. And we're currently running sort of 80% of services. Now, in the country needs our services to operate. We need to move people around. People need to get back to work. They need to go to school. They need to travel. And if we do not have this funding, we will have to cut services, and that is not what the economy needs and what the government wants at this time. So we would expect to continue to have regular conversations with the level of funding in the bus industry. Now, the bus funding is a grant. So we, whatever passenger revenue we earn kind of gets deducted for our claim. We claim effectively our net cost, the cost we've incurred less the revenue that we've taken at the fare box. So, it is important that we get back to a position where we can start reducing the level of social distancing. We can reduce, we can get more capacity on the buses and get people moving more. We're currently running at this sort of 1 meter plus, which at a maximum gives us around 50% capacity on our buses. And we are in regular dialogue with the government around how we can move that forward, how we can move the messaging away from avoiding public transportation. So I think that's what I'd say around the bus fiscal funding, constant conversation. I think with rail, we are really just turning to that side of things with rail. I mean, the good thing about the funding package for rail, that it was a six-month package, and we've got until the 20th September to work that through. At 10% to 15% levels of 10% to 15% levels of passenger volumes, which we're currently seeing, there is no way that we can go back to the way things were. And we think this is a great opportunity for us to accelerate, us together with the government, to accelerate towards what we think would be the logical conclusion from the Williams report, which is the move towards more management contracts. So we think that is a much more logical way forward. We've advocated for a long time that there needs to be a better balance of risk and reward on rail franchising, and the way that these management contracts work would be logical for that. And it was alluded to in our West Coast partnership deal as well. So I suppose a long answer to a lot of conversations going on. We don't know the direct answer, but we know that we need continued funding to enable us to continue to provide the services that the country needs. In terms of, and that sort of leads into the volume trends. I mean, look, I can't predict. I can't predict how all the schools are going to go back in the UK. I can't predict how everyone's going to go back to work in the UK. All we can say is that bus volumes are increasing gradually, but rail volumes do not seem to be increasing very much, which is why we need to work through the government guidance on using public transportation. I can say categorically that public transportation is safe. And we need to start moving away from the avoiding public transport to use it safely, and to reducing social distancing guidelines. And as people get back to work and get back to their normal ways of life, we'll see volumes increase. But we're not in a position to say when and how long that will take. Thanks for that, Satish.
Our next question comes from the line of Suzanne Yvette of Royal Bank of Canada. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Well, sorry, this is Stephanie Datt from Royal Bank of Canada. Thank you for answering my question. The first one is on your CapEx expectations for current fiscal year. You obviously mentioned you would be cutting down on investments, but could you maybe quantify how much you intended to spend in both versus by different division. My second question is on the divestment. Could you be maybe a bit more specific on Greyhound? You were pretty advanced in the process. Is everything just on hold, or is there still interest, and is it progressing at all? And then I guess it was more early days for student and transit, but if you could give us an idea of if there has been any progress at all there. And then finally, when would you expect to be able to give an outlook for the current fiscal year and return to dividend payments? Thank you.
Great. Okay. Well, look, I think I'll try and answer those ones. I think, look, on the CapEx one, you know, we are not giving guidance, so we're not telling people where we are with CapEx. What we have said is that we are cutting CapEx where we're able to, and also we have to balance off the needs of our customers, particularly in student, who have supported us throughout this crisis, and we have some contractual obligations there. So I would expect our CapEx number to be lower than it was this year, but we're not giving specific guidance on that one, Stephanie. In terms of the divestments, we have entered into an unprecedented pandemic here with all of our business effectively being closed. As we said in March, we were very advanced with those discussions. Discussions continue, but as I said earlier in my script, and I appreciate it was a long conversation earlier that we need to see the outcome of this funding, and we also need to see how we're going to recast the business in the light of the networks. I mean, the reality is most of our competitors are largely shut or running significantly reduced services. So we are the kind of leading player in the market, and we want to make sure that we take advantage of those impacts as we have these conversations. But we're continuing those conversations, but we do need clarity on how the business looks. And in terms of the North American contract businesses, we launched it. And clearly we have a situation where, you know, our student business is still closed. We need the schools to open after the summer. And once we've got some clarity on how and when they open, we can recast our numbers and we can resume that process as normal. But what I can say is when we launched it, huge amount of interest, huge amount of work had gone into it. So we're ready to go as soon as we get that clarity. And then look, I mean, the difficulty with your question about outlook, I would love to be in a position where we can give you outlook and guidance, but at the moment, as you heard today, there is a lot of uncertainty around, and until we get clarity on most of the things that we've talked about today with our businesses, it wouldn't be appropriate for us to give that outlook. But you know, clearly, I think over the past 3 months, we have probably given six updates to the market. So you know from us that as things progress and as things change, we will update the market accordingly.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Joe Thomas of HSBC. Please go ahead.
Good morning, everyone. It's Joe here from HSBC. I'm just interested, Matthew, in your questions about or your comments about driver recruitment in the US. Can you just talk about how you're going to get around those challenges and what it might mean, whether we should be worried about some sort of step up in the cost base there? I'm also wondering about the thinking more positively about the opportunities in the US. There's been talk about bigger operators taking more market share there. Are you tangibly seeing any of that at the moment? And then finally, and I guess this is related to that, obviously there's been a lot of comments about the material uncertainty statement that you're making today. I'm just wondering if that is having any impact on your ability to pick up work and what your customers are saying about it. I mean, obviously, they must have a pretty good idea about the situation that you find yourselves in. Thank you.
Yeah, no, that's great. And I'm glad you're being positive in that, Joe, because I think there are a lot of opportunities that come out of any of these difficult crises. So let me pick up on the material uncertainty point first. So, look, we have, as you know, PLC, we have to consider the going concern of the business. We've run multiple scenarios of how the business can look. We believe that we're in a strong position. We've got a lot of liquidity and headroom. Ryan's done a huge amount of work to improve that. We talked about how we've generated cash before our sort of committed capex and small amount of profit in the first quarter. So I think we've actually done well in this first quarter. But it's incumbent on us, obviously, to talk about to look at these scenarios. And it's also incumbent, unfortunately, on our auditors to work through that and document the fact that there is a lot of uncertainty in our business at the moment, and not just our business, but the sector and anybody who's involved in transportation. I don't think our customers are concerned about that. I think our UK business fully understand that we require the level of funding from the government at the moment to keep those critical services running. And I think in the US they understand actually that we've worked very well with them, and they have supported us. As I said today, we've got effective recovery rate of around 61% of revenue when we haven't been running a bus. So that's pretty strong. So we'll continue to communicate with our customers as we always do, explain to them the situation, and we'll sort of work through this period of uncertainty. I think coming back to the opportunities, yes, we've got our pipeline for acquisitions, we've got our new business prospectors out there active in the marketplace, and we are seeing more activity. Now again, these are good small bolt-on acquisitions, the kind of things that we ought to continue doing, and we will continue doing, and we are seeing activity there. And what's great about these is that they're low price. The ones we've done in the year just gone were at around less than a 4x EBITDA multiple, pretty much 95% asset backed. With vehicles, so it's a good way of buying vehicles as well. So this is a good way of growing, and I think we are optimistic there will be more of these coming up. It's a kind of a generational thing, frankly, as people retire or just don't want to carry on through this crisis. So I'm optimistic as well on this. So we need to keep our, that's why we need to be balanced in our approach. We need to control costs and preserve cash, but also be open to growth opportunities too. When I talk about the recruitment side, just that final point, look, I think what we were trying to say there was we know that labour has been a challenge for the last 4 years. We've done a lot of work on recruitment, and our systems are improved. We've got these SWAT teams that go into locations to improve, and some of the new contracts we're starting up with, and I won't mention the name, we've got two very big ones. One of them we've pretty much recruited entirely, and the other one we're doing reasonably well in. But what I didn't want people to do is to say there's a recession, therefore all your labour issues will go away. I just wanted to flag the fact that our particular demographic of part-time retiree-type workers may have a pause for thinking when they're coming back to work. Now, the reality is today, this is all work in progress, and we will see. But what I didn't want people to do is run away with the idea that the labour market is going to be really easy. We'll still have to work hard to encourage people to come and be student drivers, as will everyone in the industry. That's the key thing here.
Our next question comes from the line of Alex Paterson of Peel Hunt. Please go ahead.
Morning, everybody. Could I ask three questions, please? Firstly, just going back to your remarks on portfolio rationalisation, are you saying that the process has stopped and that you need to relaunch it when conditions are right? Put another way, beyond sort of you resuming your services, is there anything that you need to do to conclude a sale there? Do you need to reopen a data room or anything like that? Secondly, and relating to that, one thing obviously out of your control is the leverage finance markets and whether they recover or not. Just out of interest, would you consider a different route if they didn't recover? So, for instance, listing the North American businesses in North America or something like that. And thirdly, could I just ask, have you had any conversations with your banks about covenant waivers for September and March next year, or are you expecting to? Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Alex. So look, I'll cover off the first two of those, and Ryan will talk about the third one on the covenant. So look, on the portfolio rationalisation, we had launched that process. We were in discussions. You know, we'd done a huge amount of work to get ourselves ready for that. Clearly, with all of, you know, with our businesses effectively stopping, you know, we had to take a breath, as I said, you know, and manage that crisis, but also effectively recast it. But there's a huge amount of work that is currently going on in the background to make sure, A, that we're continuing to talk to the people that did demonstrate interest, and B, that, you know, all of the technical stuff that we have to do behind the scene keeps going. So once we get clarity on, you know, the schools, how they go back, when they go back, and can credibly put forward our case that this is a very, very strong business, then we'll just kick off again. And it's a question of resuming, you know, resuming and continuing where we are. I think on the leveraged finance market point, look, we went through a full-blown strategic review back in November, and we considered all options at that time, and we concluded that divesting the two North American contract business was the right thing to do. You know, it would monetize those very attractive assets, and by monetizing would provide us with cash to deal with some of our legacy issues and also provide a return to shareholders. Now, clearly, in the current climate, we continue to review and consider other options. But as we stand today, I think you know, on the assumption that all the schools are going to go back in the fall and we can recast the numbers, then we still think that selling the business would be the right approach. So look, and we've actually, you know, we've been in contact. You know, we've got advisors telling us what's going on. There are deals going on, so there are transactions happening. People are getting finance, but we just want to make sure that we do this, you know, at the right time for the appropriate value for all of our shareholders. So no, it's not stopped. A lot of work happened, still work going on, and we'll resume it, you know, as soon as we get that clarity. So, Ryan, do you want to cover off the covenants?
And Alex, on the covenants, no, we haven't approached the banks. As you've seen in the announcement and heard today, we've got positive cash momentum in the first quarter. Just remind you, the EBITDA test was 1.4 times against a covenant of 3.75 at the end of last year. So we haven't approached the banks.
Thank you.
Great. Thanks for that.
Just to remind all participants, if you would like to ask a question, please press 01 on your telephone keypads. If you wish to withdraw your question, you may do so by pressing 02 to cancel. And our next question comes from the line of Satish Sivakumar of Citigroup. Please go ahead.
Sorry, I actually had a follow-up on my earlier question.
No problem.
On the North American insurance provision, you said significant portion is for Greyhound. So is it fair to assume that about 80% of the provision is related to Greyhound because of the old or because of the age of the fleet? Is that right to think about
that? Yeah, sorry, Satish, I misinterpreted your question. I thought you were asking about what the movement was since the first half in terms of the additional provision, which obviously consists of a number of buckets. One of them is me being more conservative and prudent in terms of my underlying approach to how I'm wanting to manage it on the balance sheet. The other one is the significant impact due to the discount rate, but I thought that your question was an underlying question as to what was the underlying impact of the additional non-GAAP adjusting charge. Most of that, well, a third of that related to Greyhound because they had, as I mentioned, they had a couple of cases that went against them, unfortunately, in the second half. But in terms of the wider total provision, about a half of that relates to student. Greyhound is only about a quarter. Sorry, I misinterpreted your question earlier, and apologies for that. I thought you were asking about the movement of the additional non-GAAP adjusting charge in the second half, which a larger proportion of that related to Greyhound, as I said, because of certain cases that went against them. But just to be clear, it's got nothing to do with the age of the fleet in Greyhound.
No, this is all to do with settlements, you know, punitive settlements at court. So look, and Satish, if you want any more on that, we can provide that separately. But as Ryan said, Greyhound's, you know, around quarter, students around 50%, and transit is the other quarter.
Yeah.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Joe Thomas of HSBC. Please go ahead.
Sorry, just another one. In the UK rail business, can you just flesh out your thoughts about how the provisions that you've made on TransPennine and South West Rail are likely to play out? Obviously, the sector's in emergency measures. And my understanding is that you are basically profitable for the time being. At some point, do you still expect those provisions to unwind?
Well, it's difficult to say because we need to work it through. I think you know, I will say to you what I said to you before. South West Rail, we made a provision on the basis of the challenge with that railway, but we believe that the challenge was down to infrastructure issues and the industrial relations issues were not allowing us to deliver the quality of the bid that we wanted. So, you know, we were in discussions with the DfT around that, and we would expect to sort of continue to have conversations around that. On TransPennine, again, I mean, this is a very interesting railway. You've got issues around the fact that, you know, there's going to be a huge amount of upgrade work going along that railway with the railway for the north. The TransPennine route upgrade. So, I mean, I think, look, this is almost a case of, you know, we've had some, you know, very, very good railways, Great Western, you know, West Coast was going to be a great franchise for us. A couple that were more challenged, and as I explained, that, you know, what the issues were there. You know, I think there is an opportunity to recast the industry and just say, look, you know, we wanted to move to a different franchise model. That's why we're doing the Williams Report. Why don't we all move on to a more management-based contract? And we'll have to work through the details of that if that's where the government gets to.
Okay, thanks.
And we have no further questions at this time, so if I could hand back to our speakers for closing comments.
Well, thank you, everybody, for your time today. Appreciate it. It's been a very long session. There's a lot of details, not helped by our favourite IFRS 16 changes. But hopefully that's been helpful to you, and clearly we're available to with any further questions if you need them. Thanks a lot, everyone.
Thank you.
This now concludes our call. Thank you for attending. Participants, you may disconnect your lines.